Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we help you learn and improve your American English as we look to the east, to China. It has been 25 years since that country took action against democracy demonstrators. We'll look back and see how things have changed in a quarter century. Then, we will learn how China used a public event just last week to sentence people for what it calls the three evils. It's all about China on our program today, As It Is. 25 years have passed since China acted against pro-democracy demonstrators in Tiananmen Square. Since then, the leadership in China has taken strong steps to suppress any discussion of the events of 1989. The leaders seemingly want people to forget the huge protests and the bloody campaign against demonstrators that followed. But memory is long, especially for the protesters who were there, and 25 years have not ended the demands of the students and other citizens who gathered in the streets at that time. Anna Mateo has the story.
In the spring of 1989, people demonstrated for democracy in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. They called for change. Their calls for change were heard down the city's streets. After a time, their calls for change were heard across the nation. Students and other citizens joined in the movement. One of the demonstrators was Feng Zheng, a student and a promising sports star. At that time, hopes were high. The protesters thought they could succeed. He spoke with VOA on Skype.
University students in the 80s all had a similar attitude. They were all very idealistic. We also had a strong sense of social responsibility and concern for the fate of our country.
That all changed on June 4th, violently, for Feng Zheng and the rest of the country. He was nearly killed when a tank ran over his legs.
The government used guns, force, and blood to hold on to their power and control the protesters, and that took China further away from reform. Corruption is worse now than 25 years ago. The special power and privileges of officials are even more widespread.
The protesters had seven basic demands. One of these demands was for officials and their family members to make public how much money they were receiving. Another was the right to freely protest in Beijing. But still, a quarter of a century later, those two demands remain distant goals. China's leaders say they are in a life and death struggle against corruption. But calls for those same officials to make known their financial holdings have met with strong resistance. China's president, Xi Jinping, has launched wide reforms. But Hong Kong journalist Qing Qiong says Mr. Xi has been silent on the basic demands of the Chinese public.
And what does the people decide? People want a separation of power. People want to have a check and balance on the exercise of power. People want to have all the constitutional rights that they are entitled to.
China's constitution permits protests, or the right to gather. That is said to be true if the protests do not interfere with the interests of the state. Andrew Nathan is a political scientist at Columbia University. He says the students and workers who gathered in Tiananmen in 1989 wanted a dialogue They wanted to talk with the government.
In 89, the government, the ruling party really decided, if we dialogue with you lot, I mean, there's no knowing what you're going to start demanding from us, and then we're not going to be authoritarian rulers anymore.
But China's official position on Tiananmen is that it was a counter-revolutionary rebellion, a rebellion against the state. The government refused to talk with protesters then, and there is no sign that that position is changing anytime soon. I'm Anna Mateo.
Last week, Chinese officials used a public event in the country's northwest to sentence 55 people on terrorism and other charges. The official Xinhua news agency said 7,000 people witnessed the mass sentencing at a sports center in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. At least three people were sentenced to death. Others were jailed for murder, separatism, and organizing or taking part in terror groups. Katie Weaver joins us with more.
At the event, police announced that another 65 people were arrested on similar charges. Li Minghui is the deputy Communist Party chief in Xinjiang's Yili Prefecture. He said the public sentencing showed China's seriousness against what it calls the three evils. The three are terrorism, separatism, and extremism. The central government has announced a year-long campaign to secure the area. The announcement came after an attack last month in the city of Urumqi. 43 people were killed and more than 90 others injured in the violence. It was the latest in a series of attacks in Xinjiang, which is home to the mainly Muslim Uyghur minority group. Many Uyghurs in China often criticize religious and cultural discrimination. The government has promised to crush what it calls the low-level revolution. Following the Urumqi attack, Chinese officials increased their policing of major roads in Xinjiang. In late May, officials seized 1.8 metric tons of bomb-making materials in the Hotan area of southern Xinjiang. Officials say the Hotan suspects planned to fill vehicles with bombs and explode them as they drove through crowds of people. This was the same method used in the Urumqi attack. Exiled Uyghur groups have said that the campaign will only further endanger Uyghur rights and could worsen the situation. 25 years have passed since Chinese officials used force to crush protests in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. One protest leader, Wuar Kaixi, now lives in exile in Taipei. Wuar Kaixi is an ethnic Uyghur. He spoke to VOA about the unrest in Xinjiang.
It's a very sad situation in Xinjiang these days, in my home country. Those are terrorist attacks, when you kill innocent people, bystanders. But I really hope people can see beyond that and then realize this is the last call of a despairing nation, an ethnic group that they are giving up on life.
Wuar Kaixi has attempted to return to China's mainland to visit his aging parents, both Uyghur intellectuals. But he was unable to make the trip. He says he feels sad to be in exile and not be able to see his parents. And he is sad that the situation in Xinjiang has become so violent.
Uyghur people are committing suicide these days. When they decide to take their own life, they want to take a few Chinese together with them. It's a very sad fact. Yes, it may keep happening.
I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Please join us again tomorrow.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. A popular expression goes, "What does not kill us makes us stronger." But when it comes to being bullied, that may not be the case. Increasing evidence suggests that the effects of being bullied do not end with childhood. A recent Duke University report shows that bullying can have permanent effects. The report is based on research that began in 1993. The Great Smoky Mountains Study observed 1,420 children from Western North Carolina for years. The scientists followed the people as they went through childhood to teen years and into young adulthood. The research showed that those who were bullied can develop long-term mental health problems as young adults. It also showed that adults who were bullied as children have higher levels of C-reactive protein, or CRP. CRP is a sign of nervous tension on the body. Higher levels of CRP usually mean health problems later in life. The Great Smoky Mountains study also found something completely new about bullying. It seems that the bullies were healthier than the bullied, at least when talking about CRP levels. The study found that those subjects who had never been bullied but had bullied others had the lowest levels of CRP. William Copeland led the study. He is a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University Medical Center in North Carolina. He says a higher social standing for bullies might explain their lower CRP levels. Experts on bullying worry about that message. Catherine Bradshaw is deputy director of the Johns Hopkins Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence in Baltimore, Maryland. She warns that lower CRP levels might just represent a difference in the bully's basic biology. Ms. Bradshaw says that a health gain should not be understood as permission to bully. Mr. Copeland says bullying is a serious childhood experience that is no longer found only at schools and on playgrounds. Online or cyberbullying can make even a child's home feel unsafe. Some children who are bullied have killed themselves. Sometimes bullies even kill their victims. Mexico's president, Enrique Peña Nieto, is dealing with such a tragedy now. A 12-year-old boy died last month, a week after he was physically bullied at school. The family of Hector Alejandro Méndez Ramírez say that bullies threw the boy into a wall. He died later of head injuries. And that's the health report.
Welcome to Explorations in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week, Barbara Klein and I tell about one of the most influential thinkers in science history. Charles Darwin developed the theory of how living things develop from simpler organisms over long periods of time. That theory is known as evolution through natural selection. How do new kinds of life come into existence? For much of recorded history, people have believed that organisms were created. Few people believe that living things changed. What process could make such change possible? These were some of the questions Charles Darwin asked himself over years of research in botany, zoology, and geology. He was not the first person to ask them. His own grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, believed that species evolved. And others, like the French naturalist Jean-Baptiste Lamarck, had proposed ways this could happen. But it was Darwin who identified and explained the process, natural selection, that causes life to evolve.
Charles Darwin was born in Shrewsbury, England, on February 12, 1809. His father, Robert Darwin, was a doctor. Charles' mother, Susanna Darwin, was the daughter of the famous potter, Josiah Wedgwood. She died when Charles was only 8 years old. Young Charles was intensely interested in the natural world from an early age, but his father wanted him to be a doctor. At age 16, Charles was sent to study medicine at the University of Edinburgh, but he did not like it. He found medical operations especially horrible. He later went to Cambridge University. His father now hoped that Darwin would become a clergyman. But at Cambridge, Charles continued to follow his own interests. There, he met John Henslow, a plant scientist and clergyman. The two became friends.
John Henslow suggested that Charles Darwin take the unpaid position of naturalist for a trip on the British ship HMS Beagle. It sailed around the world from 1831 to 1836. The main goal was to make maps of the coastline of South America. The British government paid for the voyage. But another purpose of the trip was to collect scientific objects from around the world.
The Beagle's first stop was one of the Cape Verde Islands near the coast of Africa. There, Darwin noted that levels of rock extending high above the sea contained the fossil remains of shells. He thought that this was evidence that the bottom of the ocean had been lifted up by powerful geological forces over long periods of time. The Beagle continued to the coast of South America. In Valdivia, Chile, Darwin experienced an earthquake. He collected examples of plants and animals. He also collected the fossil remains of animals that had disappeared from the earth. But it was on the Galapagos Islands, off the coast of Ecuador, that Darwin found creatures that made him wonder about how species develop and change. There he saw giant tortoises and noted that the reptiles were different on each island. He collected birds, each with different beaks. Later, after he had returned to England, he would be shocked to find that these very different birds were all finches. Darwin found lizards called iguanas that lived on land and ones that fed in the sea. Darwin noted that all these species were similar to those found in South America, but they all had differences or adaptations that helped them survive in the environment of the Galapagos Islands.
Darwin sent much of what he collected back to England on other ships the Beagle met along the way. By the time he returned to England in October of 1836, he was already a well-known geologist and naturalist. Within a few years, he would be accepted into scientific organizations like the Geological Society and the Royal Society. Darwin moved to London to be near other scientists. He wrote a new version of the book about his travels. He also edited works of others about the things he had collected on his trip. Darwin also agreed to write several books, including The Zoology of the Voyage of the HMS Beagle. But in 1837, the pressure of the work caused his health to suffer. He developed problems with his heart.
Charles Darwin had poor health much of his life. He suffered headaches and problems with his skin and stomach. No one was able to find out what disease he may have had during his lifetime. Recently, some experts have suggested that he might have become infected with a tropical disease. Others suggest Darwin's health problems were caused by conflict in his mind over his theory. Poor health would later force him to leave London and settle at Down House near Kent, England. Darwin began work on a series of secret notebooks containing his thoughts about the evolutionary process. He began to think that animals developed from earlier, simpler organisms. As early as 1837, he imagined this process as a tree with branches representing new species. Unsuccessful branches ended, but successful evolutionary changes continued to form new branches.
Charles Darwin's personal life was also expanding. In 1839, he married Emma Wedgwood, his cousin. He told her his ideas about how species evolve over time, what he called the transmutation of species. Emma did not agree with her husband, but the two had a strong and happy marriage. They had 10 children together. 7 of them survived.
Charles Darwin read widely and sought ideas from other fields of study. He was influenced by Thomas Malthus's work, An Essay on the Principle of Population, written in 1798. Malthus argued that populations are always limited by the food supply. Darwin would later say that this work caused him to realize the struggle for limited resources was a fact of life. He said small changes took place in individual animals, changes that helped them survive would continue, but those that did not would be destroyed. The result of this would be the formation of new species. The British philosopher Herbert Spencer described this struggle as survival of the fittest. But biologists use the term natural selection to describe the evolutionary process.
Charles Darwin developed his idea slowly over more than 20 years. He was concerned that he would lose the support of the scientific community if he revealed it. He wrote to his friend, botanist Joseph Hooker, that speaking about evolution was like confessing a murder. It was not until 1858 that Darwin was forced to release his theory to the public. Another naturalist, Alfred Russel Wallace, had independently written a paper that contained ideas similar to Darwin's concerning evolution. Wallace had reached these ideas from his studies on islands in the western Pacific Ocean. With help from Darwin's friends, the two naturalists presented a joint scientific paper to the Linnaean Society of London in July of 1858. At first, there was little reaction. Then, in November 1859, Darwin released the results of all his work on evolution. The book was called On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. It was an immediate success.
The Origin of Species was praised by many scientists, but religious leaders denounced it. For them, evolution opposed the explanation of creation found in the book of Genesis in the Bible. Today, almost all scientists accept the theory of evolution. But many non-scientists are unsure about whether humans evolved over millions of years. In the United States, public opinion studies have shown that less than half the population believes in evolution.
Natural selection does not explain everything about why species evolve. Darwin did not know about Gregor Mendel's work on heredity, and the discovery of genetics and DNA molecules took place long after his death. Yet, Darwin theorized in a world much different from the one we know. That is why scientists today wonder at the depth of his knowledge and the strength of his arguments. Charles Darwin died on April 19, 1882. He was buried at Westminster Abbey in London, among other heroes of Britain.
This program was written and produced by Mario Ritter. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember. You can find a link to Charles Darwin's writings and research at our website, voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.